Good morning, and welcome into the Blitz live here on Fan Run Radio, live from White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I'm Charlie Collier. Across from me, back behind the board, it's Sam Beard. We're here with you for the next couple of hours, spending this rainy Wednesday with you, getting you to your lunch break, halfway point in the week. You know, lunch break on Wednesday, that is the halfway point. Unless you're taking off early Friday, I hope you are. But we're another day closer.
Second to last lunch break before the Tennessee Vols play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's all you got.
One day closer only feels so close just because we still, I mean, it only feels like a certain degree of closeness. We still just have to wait until 9 p.m. tomorrow,
right,
at a minimum.
Right.
Which, I don't know, maybe it'll tip off early again like it did last Thursday. We were expecting a 20-minute delay.
I doubt it.
Didn't get it?
I doubt it.
Didn't our game Saturday was only like a couple of minutes late too?
Yeah. I think it was, 2:10 or something like that? Was that
the
start? Well,
it was supposed to be at 2:40.
2:40, and
I think
it
started
at like
2:50.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We've had good luck with that so far. Maybe this is a jinx.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe we're about to get like a Marquise Noel, like triple
overtime
game.
Yeah.
God, could you imagine?
That's fine with me.
It's
a tired team that we're playing either way.
Well,
maybe.
Maybe. Knock on that wood. I would also just be down for a triple overtime game just for the sake of getting to watch a triple overtime game. Those are never not fun. Gosh, how late would we be tipping off if we get triple overtime? 10:15?
Yeah. It'd be like a good 45 minutes later than the last game of the Champions Classic at the start of the year, you know, where they start them at like 8 o'clock and 9:45, and you're like, what are we doing here?
That really could be late.
Could be real late.
I was surprised that we were the second game. Like, I figured that, it would be Michigan State and Kansas State as the first game.
Yeah, maybe.
But I guess, like, I don't know which one's the better time slot. Because, like, 6:30 is, I guess, a little early, but then also, like, 9 is pretty late.
I think 6:30 is perfect.
I just meant for, like, TV purposes. Because they're the better game, so I guess maybe 6:30 is the better game. I was also, I guess, kind of surprised that Arkansas and UConn was the 7:15, but I guess, you know, you put the two West Coast powers in West Coast prime time at 9:45. That kind of makes sense. And CBS going to the or having the West region and TBS having the East also makes a lot of sense. Oh yeah, CBS also taking Miami and Houston and then Xavier, Texas tomorrow. I mean on Friday.
Of course.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty decent.
Just decent?
Yeah, I mean, hard to be, like, really good with this weather,
I feel.
Like. You know, you just look outside and it's just gloomy. But we're getting our bad days out of the way. We're just getting our bad day out of the way before we have a great day tomorrow.
Is it going to be bad all day?
No, it's going to be like today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, kind of gross, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
It's going to rain until, like, 6.
5 or 6, yeah.
I don't know, maybe after 6, though, it nice. It's just going to be cloudy and still just kind of damp, I guess.
But then it's like a high of 70s, you know, for the next week.
Yeah, I'm looking. Tomorrow and Friday are sexy.
Tomorrow's a beautiful day to win a basketball game.
Tomorrow is a good day to have patio drinks before you watch your team win a basketball game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got class tomorrow?
No, not one. You know, the class that I have to leave for today early is a substitute for my class that would be tomorrow, which is beautiful.
Oh, wait, you're leaving early today? I forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
Shoot. That's not good at all.
Yeah. But no, I don't have class tomorrow, so it's a big focus day, you know, just lock in, get back from the show and lock in. I'm hoping that the weather tomorrow is the final score, you know, high of 78 and a low of 49. Maybe we just beat them 78-49. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that. But yeah, today, I mean, today, rain all day, tomorrow, 78. I'm looking at Friday, though. Friday is a low of 60 and a high of 79. Can't beat that.
Is this, you think this last week was the last week of the
second winter? Is it like, what's next? The pollinating?
Yeah, the pollinating might be happening now.
Yeah, I mean,
you're getting a lot of rain. Some of these trees and leaves are, you know, they're sprouting again.
Did fall spring last too long? Like, did we get some blooms that then have frozen away?
That's a good question.
Are we gonna have less pollen? Is that even how that works? I don't really know.
I have no idea.
I took an urban biology class one time.
Really?
Yeah. I don't really know, though. The teacher just kind of gave up halfway through the semester and just, like, had guest speakers twice a week for the last 6 weeks and, like, didn't really give us any assignments. So I don't really know anything about urban biology, but it was cool.
Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, the only thing I remember was something about windows and the warming of the cities from the windows and how you need green stuff or something. I don't really know.
Note to self, I'll go buy some green stuff in outside my windows.
I don't really remember. It was something about cities and biology, water.
Not your forte.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't listen.
Yeah. I kind of assumed that.
I mean, honestly, I think I put headphones in for the last two semesters and just, like, watched TV in the back of class because I was like, oh, we don't have assignments and we just only have guest speakers and our only grade is just to show up for the guest speaker. Now I remember. Yeah. That was how we got graded. We had to ask the guest speaker one question.
Oh. What was your go-to question? I feel like you wouldn't listen to what they were saying. So
I don't remember what the question was, but there's no way I was asking anything related to what they said. But I got my points. I'm pretty sure I got an A.
Let's go.
Maybe a B+. I don't know.
I like it.
I am pretty confident that there's never been a four-year student at the University of Tennessee that's gotten just like one singular degree that has graduated with more B pluses than me.
I mean, I don't know how to dispute that.
I mean, what, you have like five classes a semester?
Yeah, pretty much.
I would
probably
have
average
3 to 4 B pluses a year, a semester.
You were just riding that line of the A, but you couldn't get there.
Well, I would usually get an A in the other one, but it just depended how much weight they put into like homework and attendance. Because sometimes I just kind of give away like 6 free points and just be like, I'm not going to do any of your homework, but I can just get 100 on your tests and projects and I'll just still be all right.
Yeah.
So I just didn't do homework. I still think it's just dumb. You know what? If you want me to do something, give it to me in class.
It's not a bad idea. You know?
I'm in college. Don't give me a worksheet to take home.
Yeah, I don't like the assignments that feel like high school busy work in college.
I just didn't do them.
Yeah.
I don't even really think I did them in high school either, to be honest. But
sound like a real model student right now.
Yeah. Someone asked me what kind of student I was like one time for a class project, and I just told him, a bad one. Not a good one.
Not solid.
Anyway.
Made it work.
Anyway. Dude, I've been Ubering a lot now, right now, because my truck is not available.
Yeah. You officially kicking that thing to the curb, by the way?
No. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Still undecided?
I need a new transmission. Yeah, it turns out, so my speed sensor was what went out, and this whole time I've just been frustrated. Like, it's just a speed sensor, like, can we just get this thing replaced, and then... You know, it's supposed to be just like a little cheap fix. It's not like my car was having really any, you know, terrible issues. So then finally, like, I found a transmission place, took it in there. Apparently, the speed sensor is inside the transmission. And apparently, the speed sensor going out was just a byproduct of my torque converter coming apart and just shooting metal into my transmission.
That doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah. So I just need a new transmission. So that's not good.
No.
But Uber life, too, has been a weird one.
It's just kind of, you got to, like, plan out every place you want to go 30 more minutes in advance.
Yeah, I mean, also, I don't know, I feel like Ubers before 10 a.m. are just, like, a weird place to be.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think they do? Like, do you think they're taking, I guess they're taking people to work, probably, that don't have a car,
I mean,
or something.
A lot of, like, full-time job. Yeah. I think a lot of people just drive it, full-time job kind of thing, too. Yeah. But I don't know, I mean, I've had some interesting conversations. This morning, I had an Uber. So I was really trying to plan ahead so I wouldn't be late. So I called an Uber at, like, 9:10. So it was 25 minutes away. It got all the way to 10 minutes away, canceled. Then I had to call another Uber at 9:25, and then it was 20 minutes away. And then I waited on it, and then finally, yeah. So I was like, I was late getting here by a couple minutes, but I will say my second Uber, he was whipping it.
Was he?
We were in like a little small car, like the kind where my head, I have to crouch so my head doesn't get jammed up against the ceiling. He was whipping it. And also, he played in this order. So in this order, he played these songs and also sang along with them.
Hell yeah.
A song entirely in Spanish.
Oh, let's go.
The next song, America the Beautiful.
Yeah, another good song.
Like a slowed down version, too. The next song, something by Lil Nas X.
He's singing all of
these. He knew the words to all of them.
That's awesome.
Next song was You're So Gay by Katy Perry. Forgot that that song existed.
I haven't listened to Katy Perry in years.
And then then we went to worship music. And then the final song as I was getting out of the car was Hate That I Love You by Rihanna and Neo.
This guy's got an amazing music taste.
So this guy has the most range of any person maybe on... Like, I think I finally figured out what it's like to ride in my car.
No, that's way worse. Not worse, that's just way...
Because, like, I put on Shuffle, and, like, it could go from, like, Heat of the Moment by Asia to, like, yeah, like, a worship song to, like, J. Cole to Jimmy Buffett to George Strait to, you know, some, like, Led Zeppelin.
He switched languages on you. But I don't think you can touch
that. Yeah, I only have 3 songs in Spanish on my entire phone.
Yeah, I don't think you can touch this guy.
So, I don't know, like, I finally was like, okay, I guess this is what it's like to ride with me. This guy plays nothing that makes sense at all in consecutive order and sings to all the songs. That's exactly what I do. So I don't know. It was interesting.
That is very interesting.
At least it's been like some interesting ways to start days. I do miss playing my own music, but we'll see what happens. Maybe.
You could request a song from your next Uber, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll just get the truck and just drive it with the broken transmission and just see what happens.
That seems like a bad idea.
Maybe. I don't know. Just here and back. Anyway, we'll catch a break. We'll dive into the news of the day on the other side. Let's make some music, make some money. All right, back here on Blitz. Pretty good sports night last night.
Yeah.
Just on a random Tuesday night, you know, before baseball season started and, you know, without college basketball. Well, I guess you had the NIT. Pardon me. But I think a pretty good sports night. I think everyone was really locked into the WBC.
It seemed like it.
It felt like one of those nights where collectively everyone was watching and on the Twitter timeline, and everyone was kind of engaged in the same thing. WBC, major success.
Major.
I mean, phenomenal event.
Blew it out
of
the water.
I don't really know, like, I don't know where you go from here. I don't really know if there's any way for the MLB to capitalize on the success of the WBC. I don't really know if it leads to anything, but I know that I sure enjoyed it, and I sure can't wait until, 2026, until we get another one?
Yeah, maybe that's just the only fix. Maybe make the WBC every, like, 2 years instead of 4.
Yeah, I mean,
give the people some, I don't know.
I thought it was
great. I had a great time.
I had a great time. I mean, you couldn't have had a more storybook scripted in ending either than – like Shohei Ohtani, the pride of Japan from a baseball perspective since Ichiro retired, going up against his former teammate in Captain America, Mike Trout, in a one-run game with two outs in the ninth inning. Shout out to Kyle Schwarber for hitting that home run in the eighth, just so, like, that moment delivered.
That was a nuke, too. He hit, like, three straight homers that were foul balls, and then he was like, all right, straighten this one out, and he just got one down the middle. I mean, it looked like it was just – it looked like an electronic bat. It just, like, straight out into
distance. So far. It was just an electric moment. I mean, again, to teammates, beloved guys, and I think kind of the leader, the pride of, like, each of those – respective countries' baseball teams. Gotta be a bad feeling if you're an Angels fan. I don't know. I guess kind of cool to see them go up against each other, but, like, man, here they are competing at the highest of levels, and we can't even get past third place in the AL West with both of them.
Right. That's what I said that yesterday. I was like, man, these guys, how can you have, like, two of the best players in the world on your team?
You can't even finish second.
And you can't even, like, sniff the playoffs.
Like, not even second in the division? Really? Not even once, Angels. What a pitch. Well, first of all, just back to the top of the ninth. Jeff McNeil, the at-bat that he worked is not ever going to get enough credit because Mookie Betts hit into a double play next at-bat. What an at-bat from Jeff McNeil just to start the top of the ninth. My goodness.
Laying off, like,
he took two 100-mile-an-hour fastballs that could not have been more than half an inch off the black.
Yeah, you could have struck him out, technically. Like, one of those calls was very, very, very close.
And excellent job by the home plate umpire in that at-bat, too. I mean, he was spot on. And Trout's at-bat, too. He was all over it. You know, I guess I wasn't really paying attention, like, whole game how good he was with balls and strikes. I don't know if there were any major complaints, but really stood out to me in that ninth inning. He did a great job. But great at-bat from Jeff McNeil. Kind of sucked that Mookie hit into that double play. But then, yeah, that Mike Trout at-bat, I mean, you can hang that in the Louvre. What is that? Is that how you say it? That fancy art museum?
Yep. There you go. You got it. The Louvre.
The Louvre. You can hang that in there. I mean, it goes full count. To get to a full count, Mike Trout is able to spit on a belt-high 100-mile-an-hour fastball that's about an inch off the plate. So you're sitting there 3-2. You started the at-bat with a slider. You know, I guess you kind of figured Trout would be looking to jump on one of those Ohtani fastballs. Maybe, you know, the whole teammate thing, you're amped up. You think maybe he's challenging him. So smart by Ohtani. Start him off with a slider. You know, break a slider off on him. But then he'd been hammering with some fastballs, and I think if you're Trout, after getting a fastball just off the black in a 2-2 count to push it to 3-2, if you're Trout, you're sitting there thinking, okay, he's going right. He's going to go trip back to that spot. You know, he has that feel. He tried to throw a little chase pitch, and he put it right there. You know, he put it right there. Just off the plate. So he has that feel of that spot. If you're Trout, you're thinking, I think he's going to try to hammer that outside.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to try to just put one right on the black, right on the outside part of the plate at 100 miles an hour, and I'm not going to get my arms out to it. So I think that's what Trout was thinking in that situation based off the sequencing. And, you know, Ohtani's smart enough to probably think, okay, Trout's thinking that I'm going there, let me break off one more slide piece on him.
Nasty.
And let me put it right on the black so it looks like a fastball out of the hand. It looks like it's heading right to that outside part of the plate. Trout looked like he was sitting on that outside fastball too, man. He stepped out into it, and he swung like he wanted to tie a baseball game and just was swung right over top of it.
Yeah.
Just an 88-mile-an-hour slider and a 3-2 count with a championship on the line, and he paints the black.
Filthy pitch.
Unbelievable.
And he looked so locked in that at-bat, too. Like, they would pan to Shohei, like, when he's in the stretch, and then it's just, like, he looks like he's staring into the soul of people in the the Japanese dugout.
Time out. Are you hearing like a knocking sound?
Yeah, but it doesn't really sound like a knock. It doesn't. It just sounds like a almost sounds like a woodpecker.
It does. It's really it's weirded me out.
You think it's the rain?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe someone's just trying to like break in, hurt us.
Can't get us now.
Yeah, we got two doors. Can't get through two doors. But World Baseball Classic, though, I mean, I think from start to finish, all the way back to pool play when you had Italy with the cappuccino machine in their dugout.
Yeah.
You know, to the final when you get two of the world's best against each other.
The Croatian team full of volunteers. Like, they don't even – none of them play professional baseball. They're like – some of them are like bankers, firefighters, just like random jobs. They won a game. It's awesome.
Everything about it was great. And, you know, we talked about how can the MLB capitalize on this or where does the MLB go from this? I don't really know what the answer is to that. I mean, maybe you get more Japanese players in the MLB.
Yeah. Allow, like, drums and air horns in the games.
That'd be fun, too.
Like, I think it was just the atmosphere that it was awesome.
That was one of my takeaways, though, is, like, there. I mean, we know the two best baseball leagues in the world are the MLB and then, gosh, I can't remember what the abbreviation is, but the highest level of professional baseball in Japan. Those are the two best leagues in the world. Japan has some great baseball players. We've seen, you know, time and time again, like we've seen players come over from Japan, and I think, you know, they can only be like put up at a certain time or like a certain age. Like, I know the pitcher that started against Mexico, who's 21, that was throwing 102 and was smooth as all get out, he like they're saying that he's not going to be available to MLB teams for another couple of years.
I don't know those restrictions and stuff.
Yeah, I don't really know the details of it either. One of Japan's best players has recently been signed by the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I have seen that.
But I think that...
Why can you take a kid out of like South America, though, at 14 years old?
Probably something to do with contracts and their affiliation with certain leagues, I'd assume.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think we could see... The West has been all over Japan, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, recently, again, we've seen the Cubs last year signed, I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name. I'll look him up.
The Red Sox just signed a guy. You know, we've seen the West Coast be interested, you know, just because they have...
Seiya Suzuki.
Yeah, Seiya Suzuki. I mean, they have a closer just distance to Asia. You know, they have more of a market there with Asian fans on the West Coast. But I think we've seen more teams, you know, get into that kind of market. But I do think that, like, scouts and organizations are going to pay even more attention to Japan.
I agree.
I also, you know, we didn't have a pitch clock in the WBC. We didn't have these new rules, and it didn't seem to matter, which I think has raised the question to some people. Was it that the games were too long? Or is it that there's just too many games that it's hard for the games to still feel like there's high stakes?
Mm-hmm. Engagement is 100% the issue.
Yeah, I think it is. It's more about engagement and less about the time of the game, which, to me, the pitch clock, it's less about shrinking game time. And I was anti-pitch clock until I've been watching a lot of spring training. It's not so much like... Sure, it's cool that like you can catch a game in an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours sometimes if guys are pitching well, but also there's a pace. You know, I think I'm a baseball traditionalist. You know, I don't want to shrink the calendar. I don't want a lot of these rules in place necessarily, but I do think we'd gotten to the point in baseball where you just completely lacked any sort of pace, any sort of flow, where it did start to feel monotonous when you'd have, you know, a pitcher shake off, finds five signs and step out, and then a batter step in, readjust his gloves and kick up some dirt and, you know, put his hand up and call time. Like, there is I've seen a clip, there is an entire inning of baseball played in spring training at a quicker pace than one pitch was thrown in a playoff game.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, like, sometimes they take like 45 seconds in between pitches.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, come on, let's go.
So I agree,
the pace is good.
Again, like I think the pitch clock needs some working. I don't want it in the playoffs. I mean, I think they're being a little too strict with the whole batter looking at the pitcher rule, because I think that's pretty subjective. Like, there are some things that need to be fixed there, but no, I have really enjoyed the pitch clock, actually. I really like that there is a pace to the game. But the WBC was awesome. The finish was fantastic. And I think we can all just cross our fingers that in 2026, we're allowed to have our best pitchers.
Where is it at in 2026? Do you know that?
I don't know. You're our research department.
Yeah.
2026.
I think I looked it up last night and just totally forgot.
I want to go to a game next time.
Yeah, it would be cool to be down there, huh? Well, I don't know if it says.
Maybe let's do it in Miami again.
Not known. Subject to bargaining in the next CBA.
All right.
Interesting.
I mean, Miami seems like a pretty decent spot for it. You can get all of these South American countries in there pretty easily. I guess it's more challenging for the Asian countries.
Phoenix would probably be pretty easy, too.
Yeah. I mean, that's where they were playing some of the early games, too, was
right.
in Phoenix.
Maybe you just flip-flop it. Do some of the pool play in Miami and the finals in Phoenix.
Yeah. I'm really disappointed, too. Our friends in Phoenix or in Scottsdale didn't go to a game.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed in them.
Guy did, but he plays baseball.
Yeah.
But he went to one. It was pretty cool.
I mean, I just – what losers? The ex-baseball players in the World Baseball Classics in your city, and you can't take the time to go to a game?
Lazy.
Lazy. Oh, man. Good time, though. Again, it sucks that, you know, we couldn't have – our best pitchers, we couldn't have our Lance Lynn's and our, I mean, really just our top-of-the-line pitchers at all. And, you know, they closed the game out with Yu Darvish and Shohei Ohtani. And it's like, well, we have Merrill Kelly and Kyle Freeland. Oh, those don't work for you? Here's Daniel Bard. Like, not bad pitchers. Devin
Here's
Williams
Adam,
is probably the best pitcher.
A dude with a first name, last name.
End of the day, though, World Baseball Classic was great. We'll catch a break. We'll talk about some of the matchups when it comes to Tennessee and Florida Atlantic here on the other side. All right. Back here on the Blitz, like we mentioned, I guess this is why Andy's not here to tell us when our 48-hour focus should have started.
Dang.
We're late. Or maybe it's just a 24-hour focus in basketball. Shorter.
Can't focus
time.
For too long. I kind of like that.
All right, 24-hour focus then. It starts
48-hour focus because, you know, we didn't have, like, a Saturday show, you know? I mean, like, yeah, let's just do a 24-hour focus because we got to, yeah.
24-hour focus.
24-hour focus. Yep.
Looking at this matchup, though, it is an interesting one on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're looking at a pretty interesting contrast in styles. It's an FAU team that is going to emphasize the rim and three offense that is, you know, increased in popularity over the last couple of years. Seems like everyone now, they want to copy that rim and three offense, which I think Tennessee is going to do a decent job of taking away some of the cuts to the rim, some of the drives to the rim. You know, I do think there are going to be times that FAU might be able to use their quickness to get around some bigger guards for Tennessee. I wonder what the game plan will be with help defense. You know, what the plan is, how aggressive you're going to be on your rotations. We know how aggressive you're going to be with that secondary defender. Because that is how you get torched by a team like this. You know, someone gets beat off the bounce, secondary defender slides over. outside defender rotates down, and then you pass out of it, and you have a second pass to a wide-open three-point shooter. So I do wonder if there's going to be part of Rick Barnes that maybe says, hey, let's be a little bit less aggressive with our secondary defense, and if that leads to, you know, an uncontested layup or two, or maybe a partially contested layup or two, that's better than giving up the three. Maybe that's something that you talk about. But, I mean, you look at FAU's starting lineup. It's going to be presumably Brian Greenlee. He's 6 feet tall. That's their point guard. Nick Boyd is their shooting guard. He's 6'3". You know, Elijah Martin, he's their small forward. He's 6'2". John L. Davis, their star, he's what makes them go. Him and Elijah Martin, both good players, but John L. Davis has been the headliner.
Mm-hmm.
He's technically, I guess, maybe their power forward. He's 6'4", 203, but he can bring the ball up the court. Like, he can run the offense, too. All four of those guys can be pretty interchangeable. You know, all four of those guys can handle the ball, can pass it around. And then they have a center, Vladislav Golden, who's 7'1", 240. So he's got that 7-footer, you know, kind of wingspan length. Not super beefy, though. Like, I don't think he's all that strong. You know, not the toughest guy in the world when it comes to, like, anchoring himself down in the paint. But they're going to play four around one. And you look at their bench. I mean, again, they rotate a lot of guys in. They're top 30 in the country in terms of bench usage. So, a heavy rotation. Jalen Gaffney's 6'3". Michael Forrest is 6'1". Brandon Witherspoon is 6'4". And Giancarlo Rosado is 6'8". So, I mean, your center's 7'1", your backup center is 6'8", and everyone else is 6'4", or smaller. They are a bottom 50 team in the country when it comes to height. I want to say they were 329th in the country in average height.
Makes sense.
With a 7-footer.
Yeah.
It's going to present some interesting matchups. I mean, you're not going to go two bigs, right? That's, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but what are you going to do? Put Olivier Kamwa on someone that's 6'4 or smaller and have him go out on the perimeter? Like, I don't see that being the answer. So, you know, it kind of stinks the area that you have the most depth in your front court, where you have Olivier and Tobe and Jonas and Urosh. Like, you're probably not going to be playing more than one of those guys at a time.
Yeah, that is a good point.
I don't know. I mean, I assume Jemiah Meshack, Santiago Vescovi, Josiah Jordan-James. And then I guess you just also put Julian Phillips out there.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I feel like you got to put Phillips in there.
And you put that out there with Olivier?
I would think Olivier.
I mean, especially when it's 6'8 Giancarlo Rosado, then it's going to be Olivier. You know, when it is Golden out there, the 7-footer, you know, you can spend some time with Urosh and maybe even try to force them to go big. You know, you could counter and force them to try to put both of those guys out there, but that's probably not going to work. You know, but you could put Urosh out there against the 7-footer and Jonas, and I think you could put Tobe out there too against either Rosado or Golden. But, yeah, I guess you will start with Olivier. And I like the extra athleticism you're going to have out there. You know, it'll be a more interesting game. I think the pace of the game is going to pick up, which doesn't necessarily favor Tennessee. Tennessee needs to keep this game slowed down, you know, limit the possessions here. But I think you probably will see that small ball lineup with Triple J and Julian and Meshack and Vescovi and Olivier. You know, I don't really know how else you would go about defending this team. Which I guess kind of raises the question, Who are you putting on John L. Davis? Are you putting Jemiah Meshack? Are you putting Julian Phillips? Are you putting, you know, Triple J? I don't think Triple J anymore. I think it's probably Jemiah Meshack with, you know,
I think you
got to
ride the hot hand with Meshack, yeah.
I mean, he has kind of officially developed into that, you know, stopper type role.
Mm-hmm. I think you got to put Mayshak on him for the most of the night. It's just, yeah. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword here with how you're going to have to play some small ball, knowing that your bigs are your best depth piece, I guess, of your team, and they're a deep guard team, and you don't exactly have that depth. So it is kind of you're trying to ride the line between both of those, which is going to be very interesting, I think. I think, like you said, controlling the pace of this game, I think, is the biggest aspect of it. Because then, you know, if you let them get out and start running with those guards, then, you know, you're not being able to rotate in some of those big men like we're talking about, being able to rotate, you know, Euros, Jonas, Olivier, Tobe. You know, it does kind of put you into a little bit of a handcuff if you let them control the pace of that game. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing I'm looking for.
I think I want Jemai on John L, though.
Yeah.
You know, I think he can do the best job of sticking with him through ball screens, like still being physical, but also quick enough to follow him around the court and to close out strong, because, you know, Davis isn't amazing around the rim. He's 55% around the rim. But from straightaway three, you know, he's a 40% three-point shooter from there. He's 39% from the corner. From the left side, too. You know, he likes that little pull-up J. He's 50% from there. I like Jemai Mayshak's ability to close out. I like his length. And, again, I think he's just really good at kind of staying right there on guys' hip pockets and making it really difficult to create that separation to get shots off, a little bit more so than Julian Phillips, who, again, I think is one of your better defenders, a very underrated defender. But I think it will be Mayshak's. My guy Jordan sent me over the stat this morning. We'll send it over. He said that Tennessee 23-1 this year when Olivier Conwell has a positive plus-minus.
That's interesting.
3-8 when he doesn't.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of coincides with, like, Triple J to an extent. Like, when Triple J has 10-plus points, this team also has a very good record. So, you know, some of those guys haven't played together, you know, at different times this year, whatever else, but I think it goes back to the point. Essentially, you need one of the two. It has to be either Triple J or Olivier Conwell contributing from an offensive standpoint, scoring from you know, a couple different levels to just free up the space that Santiago Vescovi needs to operate. You know, you don't have Zakai, you don't have that point guard. We know that by now. We've been playing like that for about a month. But, yeah, one of those guys has to play well for the proper spacing to occur offensively, you know, for this offense to be able to operate fluidly. One thing I'd like to see some Triple J post-ups, some Triple J, you know, go to work in the paint, get that high release little mid-range jumper off. Mm-hmm. He loves that elevate, high release, just knock down right around the elbow type jumper. And I want to see Julian Phillips get down there on the low block and get his back to the basket. You know, no matter who's guarding Julian Phillips, he's going to be taller. He's probably going to be more athletic and potentially a little bit stronger. I want to see some of the, you know, our forwards get that smaller lineup down in the paint and make them foul you, you know, make life tough on them. I think that's where you have the advantage is even, what have they been saying, drag people into the mud? Even though it's a smaller, more athletic team, make them play your game. And once again, yeah, drag them into the mud. Make them roll around, get all sloppy and wet in there with you.
Muck it up.
Take that smaller team into the paint offensively. Make them uncomfortable. Make them get physical. Make them foul you.
Yeah, get them into foul trouble. Get their bench going.
Yeah, I would love to see some Julian Phillip post-ups. But, you know, the size and everything, it does present some pretty interesting potential lineup combinations. It's going to look like some positionless basketball out there at times, I think.
Yeah. I think that was an interesting point, you know, wondering if Barnes may do the almost intentional counter of playing the bigger lineup to try and force them to maybe get a little uncomfortable. That would be interesting. I think that could work potentially.
I mean, I think you'll probably try it at some point.
Yeah.
you put Urosh out there, or Jonas, or Aid, or you know, or Awaka on their 7-footer, and you try to have Olivier guard their least athletic of the other four, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Their worst 3-point shooter, so he can maybe play a little bit of drop coverage. I don't think it would work, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rick Barnes tries it. And, you know, if it does work, if Olivier is able to stay in front and not get into foul trouble, then offensively, you're already going to have a big rebound advantage from an offensive rebounding standpoint. That could grow exponentially. And, again, you can really pound it inside.
Yeah, if they're not knocking down those shots that, you know, would be open.
The one thing about going
would be having a huge advantage.
The one thing about going with a smaller lineup, from a rebounding perspective, offensively, if you're a little bit more spaced out, some of the angles you get for rebounds kind of change. You know, some of just the I guess the way you rebound in general kind of changes, which, you know, I don't know. I don't think it'll be a big deal, but, you know, maybe there are a couple of rebounds that you typically get, but you have some more guys out on the perimeter spread out, so, you know, they fall into the hands of Florida Atlantic. But, yeah, just in general, again, interesting lineup, interesting height, weight kind of combinations, and I'm excited to see how Rick Barnes addresses it. Maybe a little nervous, maybe a little anxious, but I'm also excited to see.
Mm-hmm. Feels like a big in-game coaching adjustment game. You know, you're going to have to just really – I think you're going to have to roll out there with maybe three or four different – maybe not three or four, but just a couple different looks, you know, and just see what's working for the day. Because I think there could be there could be something that you think is going to work at the start of the game and it doesn't end up working out. But I think you could also pivot to, you know, like you're saying, that bigger lineup that may give them more trouble than gives you trouble with how good of a defensive team you are. You know, maybe you just rely on some of your bigger guys to be able to lock down someone who's a little bit smaller in stature, a little bit quicker, but, you know, you have a bigger advantage on the boards and, you know, on the defensive end as well. So it will be very interesting to see what kind of lineups they roll out there.
Gosh, I had one more thing to kind of tie it all together, and
she slipped away.
She slipped away. She did. She really did.
She really did.
Oh yes, one thing that I do think does suit Tennessee pretty well. I don't know if you've paid attention to this, which I'll knock on wood again here. 3-point shooting, way down. Way down over this tournament. And not even just this tournament. It's been a trend now for a while. In the round of 64, teams shot 30% from three, 30.9. And in the round of 32, teams shot 30.7%.
Mm.
Last year, it was just as low. You know, that's well under the season average of like 35%.
That's a good stat for playing a team that loves to shoot the three. Maybe. Hopefully.
Hopefully. I mean, I think so. I think with 3-point shooting down, it's a good sign.
Yeah. And we've been shooting. It seems like we've been shooting the three a lot better, too.
Wasn't great against Louisiana, but it was, what, 42% against Duke? Or was it good against Louisiana? And it just wasn't Santi. Now I can't remember. I don't think we shot the ball well against Louisiana. I'm pretty sure it was bad.
I don't think – yeah, Louisiana, I don't know if it was
great. I'm pretty
sure
it was very bad.
Let's see.
You were in
– Louisiana would have been – we shot –
25%, yeah.
Yeah, that's not
great. I was going to say, did not shoot well, but I think we shot, what, 42% against Duke on Saturday from three?
Yeah, 9 of 21 from three.
You know, we didn't shoot a ton of threes, but 21 threes. Shout out to Olivier for, you know, going 3 of 4 and Santi for going 4 of 8 there. Josiah is still kind of looking for his stroke.
Mm-hmm.
He was 1 of 5. I don't know. I still think maybe we can get a good Josiah game in there somewhere. I don't think we've been getting bad Josiah games. I mean, against Duke, defended well, had 4 assists, 5 rebounds, 7 points, 3 steals. Like,
You just haven't had one of those games where he gives you like 15, 17.
Yeah, wow, it'd be nice to have one of those where he does, yeah, where he gives you double digits, where he gives you something in the teens. But, you know, if he gives you 7, 5, 4, and 3 steals, that's enough to win with other players playing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 50% free throws, 33% from the field, and 8 points, 2 turnovers against Louisiana. That's not going to get it done. But, you know, what he did against Duke and his defensive contribution, he had a pretty tough matchup offensively, too. I don't think he was prepared for Whitehead's length. Usually when he gets that high release, that turnaround jump shot, when he's at the very top of that release point, it's a pretty unblockable shot, but Whitehead was able to get to it a couple times. I don't think he was really prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, not a bad game from him, though. Gonna need a big game from him or Olivier. I mean, we've talked about it. But, yeah, 10:58. Sam, you're hitting the road.
Yep.
Guess that'll just wrap us up for the Blitz today.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just – a one-hour show today. We'll be back with 2 tomorrow. Appreciate y'all tuning in. I guess we'll give you an hour of Dan Patrick and then John Reed coming up at noon. But tomorrow we'll be back, and it'll be game day right here on Fan Run Radio.